Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Welcome to DW's Africa Link program this Wednesday, the 15th of August, 2018. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura. We are also live on our Facebook page, that's DW Africa. Now, coming up on the program, with only 6 months to the elections in Nigeria, dozens of parties have registered to take part with hope of winning the presidency.
As we are talking now, the Independent National Electoral Commission in Nigeria has just registered 23 more political parties. In all, there are 91 political parties in the country.
And a little later today, German Chancellor Angela Merkel will be meeting with the Nigerian President Mahamudu Issoufou in the German city of Merseburg.
And also on the program, at least 39 people have been confirmed dead in the deadly bridge collapse in Italy. And now a bitter dispute about who is responsible. We hear from DW's Charlotte Chelsom-Peel at the scene.
One of them of being the company that operates this stretch of road, Autostrade. There are allegations from the government that they weren't doing enough to protect the safety of this bridge. They weren't doing enough when it comes to maintenance.
These are some of the stories that we've lined up for you. But first, let's, as usual, listen to other news headlines from around the world.
I'm Eunice Wanjiro with DW News. Italy's Deputy Prime Minister Luigi Di Maio blames the collapse of a major highway bridge in Genoa on lack of maintenance by the private company that operates many of the nation's toll highways. Speaking in Genoa, Di Maio said that he was looking at revoking highway concessions.
When you don't invest in maintenance and you just give the profits to the shareholders, that's when these bridges collapse. We are here to say that we will analyze the contract and we are ready to withdraw the concessions and to give fines of up to 150 million euros.
E a dare multe fino a 150 milioni di euro.
At least 39 people have been confirmed dead after the giant motorway bridge collapsed in Genoa on Tuesday in northwestern Italy. The death toll is expected to mount further, and Di Maio has declared a 12-month state of emergency in Genoa. At least 22 students drowned on Wednesday when a boat carrying more than 40 people sank while crossing the Nile in northern Sudan, state news agency SUNA said. Civil defense forces were searching the waters for the missing passengers but had not recovered the bodies. A female hospital employee also drowned. In the US, a grand jury in the state of Pennsylvania has published an unsettling report on the sexual abuse of children by Roman Catholic priests. It says at least 1,000 children were molested and raped by priests over a period of 7 decades. The report accuses senior church officials, including the man who is currently the Archbishop of Washington, D.C., of systematically covering up reports of pedophilia brought to them by their parishioners. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. German Chancellor Angela Merkel and Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan have discussed the conflict in Syria and the Turkish leader's state visit to Berlin next month in a phone call. Merkel's spokesman Stefan Seibert said the leaders discussed Erdogan's state visit to Berlin on September 28 and agreed that their finance and economy ministers would meet in the run-up to the meeting. Officials from Erdogan's office said the two leaders confirmed their commitment to maintaining high-level visits and contacts to strengthen cooperation. And in the meantime, a Turkish court has ordered the release of the honorary chairman of Amnesty International's Turkey branch, Taner Kilic, the rights group said. Kilic spent more than a year in jail over alleged links to the 2016 failed coup. In a related case, Turkish court rejected an appeal to release American pastor Andrew Brunson. And finally, Nigerian police have detained a journalist for refusing to disclose the source of a story about last week's takeover of parliament by security agents, his employer said on Wednesday. Samuel Ogundipe, a reporter with the independent online newspaper Premium Times, was arrested with two colleagues on Tuesday and detained at the special anti-robbery squad in Abuja, the capital. Ogundipe's colleagues were later released after questioning. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Eunice Wanjiro.
And this is DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. With me, Isaac Mugabe.
And me, Wanjiko Mwaura. Just to remind you, we are live on our Facebook page. That's DW Africa. And we have Jabi who says hello to us, Isaac. We have also Lebo who is laughing. Yeah. I'm not sure exactly why, but perhaps we will get to that. Now, we begin the program today in Nigeria, where political parties are already bracing for next year's general election 6 months ahead of time. The Independent National Electoral Commission has registered 23 new political parties, bringing the total political parties to 91.
That's a big number. Nigerians have been wondering how the ballot papers will look like. This is also coming at a time when the National Assembly has not sat down to approve the budget meant for conducting the elections. For more on this new development, I've been speaking to Ben Shemang in Abuja, and he's been telling me some interesting points. Please take a listen.
Yes, Isaac, I want to tell you that as we are talking now, the Independent National Electoral Commission in Nigeria has just registered 23 more political parties. In all, there are 91 political parties in the country, and Nigerians are feeling, wow, a whopping large number in terms of the political parties in this country. How can the Independent National Electoral Commission manage this in terms of election management, bearing in mind that we have around 37 states in this country? How will they do it? And of course, Isaac, just listen to what some Nigerians are saying.
I think we are not serious. We are making caricature of the whole thing. How on earth will you have 91 political parties in Nigeria? We want them to be vibrant. And no, we have missed it. Well, let them make it 100 if they want. Let them make it 200. Because there's no seriousness in it. 91 political parties in Nigeria? No. We have not started. We still have a long way to go. Thank you.
There is no headway. New 23 more parties. When we have just APC and PDP contesting, I don't see the headway.
Those were voices of ordinary Nigerians talking about, you know, the candidates there. Ben, I'm sure it won't be easy by all means for the Electoral Commission to organize these elections. And I'm just wondering how the ballot paper will look like. I mean, Nigeria might go in the Guinness Book of Records as one with the most number of presidential candidates in a single election. It is unimaginable for me, isn't it, Ben?
Honestly, it's a very big question. Some would say a million euro question in Nigeria here. Because some were even saying, look, it's going to look like a very big mat. How large will we look like? Again, when voters do vote in, how would they kind of, the ballot boxes, how would they look like? As they're showing, again, Isaac, just listen to what some of Nigerians are saying in terms of the ballot paper, how it will look like.
The ballot papers will look clumsy. People won't be able to even identify which party is, who is who.
It's really funny. Please,
we need to put a house in order. There's nothing to write about that. I think we must be more serious about what's going on politically.
I was speaking to Ben Shemang in Abuja. And of course, you know, Wanjiko, you can also imagine that ballot paper of 91 presidential candidates.
91 is such a huge number.
It's a huge number. And of course, also think about the box.
but then you have to acknowledge that Nigeria has a big population. So perhaps there are really 91 people who can lead the nation. I have a comment here quickly from Emmanuel Amolo, who's a Nigerian journalist. And he says, I can't imagine the ballot paper if that happened. And he adds, I still feel a two-party system is easier to manage. It's cost-effective and helps the electorate decide promptly as it was in 1993. This is his comment.
Well, I don't dispute the fact that Nigeria is huge and perhaps it deserves 91, you know, candidates, but India is larger than Nigeria and has 63 points, just to balance it. And on Facebook Live, there is Ruterika Alex who says he's listening from Kigali. He's our regular listener. Mauricia Anita says, hello. Hello back to you. And Jabi Abdul Salami says, thanks, DW Africa. Many thanks for you. Now, German Chancellor Angela Merkel is expected to meet Nigerian President Mahamudu Issoufou in the German city of Merseburg to discuss, among other key issues, migration. Niger is a crossroads for people from all around West Africa, especially the desert town of Agadez.
Now, thousands set off from here in the hope of finding a better future in Europe. First, they cross the desert. and then the Mediterranean Sea. Refugee trafficking is thriving, although the government of Niger has recently made it illegal. This report by Sabine Borland is now presented by Tabia Goplet.
Alison Horvate is one of the refugees in the town of Agadez, Niger. He is dreaming of a better life in Europe, but he doesn't want to undertake the dangerous journey across the Mediterranean. He's heard too many terrible stories of migrants living in squalid conditions in Libya. And there's another reason he wants to stay in his own country. He fell in love with Amina from Nigeria. Amina doesn't want to leave either and has the same fears about life in Libya.
I wanted to get to Europe to earn money, but the reports from Libya scared me off. That's why I stayed here.
The situation is worrying for both Alessan and Amina, and that's why Amina has to travel back to Nigeria to reconnect with her children and family.
My dream is
that Alessan and I could get married and enjoy a comfortable life. Perhaps one day we can get to Europe together, and maybe we could even bring my children with us.
Alessan, for the time being, found a job at an upmarket restaurant. But there are very few diners, because Niger is a refuge for Islamic terrorists.
Agadez depends on tourism, but people from the West are not coming anymore because of the situation here and in Libya. Everything is so difficult now.
For now, the couple can only hope that the situation in their home countries improves and that they won't have to undertake the dangerous crossing of the Mediterranean.
A report by Sabine Boland. And away from Africa, let's go to Italy. Grief is turning to anger as people seek answers as to how a motorway bridge in Genoa could collapse without warning. At least 39 people are now known to have died in the disaster.
Rescuers are still searching the rubble for survivors. Italy's deputy prime minister says the company that runs the bridge should be held accountable. For more on what the authorities are saying and the latest, here's Charlotte Chalson-Peel at the scene.
They are telling us that they do still have hope that more survivors will be found. There are, of course, a number of people still thought to be missing, but let's not forget we are over 24 hours now from the time of this disaster. Hope is starting to fade gradually that they will find survivors. Of course, the death toll has risen today. We've had more bad news. Of course, this is a huge logistical nightmare for those on the ground just behind me trying to search for survivors. There are enormous slabs of concrete that they have to be incredibly careful with. They worry, of course, that the concrete could collapse, perhaps crushing anybody that could still be alive underneath the rubble. They're saying that they're treating this very much like an earthquake, just using small equipment sniffer dogs trying to see if anyone is still alive in the wreckage. But of course there is a very real concern that as time goes on the search for survivors could then turn to a search for bodies.
What can you tell us about the dispute as to who's responsible for this?
One of them being the company that operates this stretch of road, Autostrade. There are allegations from the government that they weren't doing enough to protect the safety of this bridge. They weren't doing enough when it comes to maintenance. That is something that Autostrade has fiercely denied. They've said that the maintenance checks were up to date. But there are big questions being asked there. Members of the government, in fact, saying that there have to be high-profile resignations. They're saying that they want the names and surnames of the people that are found to be responsible for this.
Charlotte Chalson-Peel at the scene in Italy, Genoa.
And a comment here from Emmanuel Awulei says, your news is loud and clear here in Accra, Ghana. And he adds, I think we must wake up to deal with the Genoa motorway bridge.
I see also Winston Bishop. He says he's listening live from Nigeria. And so is Ikabis Nwachuku, who says our vote doesn't count, no need to register. That's about the Nigerian story we've just been reporting on. And so Alexander Chibuze, also Nduku, just join in. Keep the debate flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa. You are listening to Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany, with me, Isaac Mugabe.
And me, Wanji Komwaora. Join us live on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and drop your comments below. We'll read them as and when we can.
Now, coming up in the next 15 minutes, we'll be hearing the plight of street children in Uganda.
I finished like 1 year going to street to beg for money. When you don't bring 10,000, you not sleep, you not eat.
And we still have more for you. But first, we head over to Zambia, where the government has introduced a new daily tax on internet-based calls. The government says this is in order to save jobs in the telecommunications industry, while critics maintain the move is aimed at silencing divergent views and curtailing freedom of expression.
Dora Zilia, the Minister of Information and Broadcasting Services, says the government decided on the move after noticing an increase in the number of people making internet phone calls at the expense of traditional phone calls, thereby impacting on telco operations. Here's Kathy Sikombi reporting.
Speaking after a cabinet meeting, Information Minister and Chief Government Spokesperson Dora Zilia says the daily tariff of 30 cents in US dollars will be charged through mobile phone operators and internet service providers. The tariff covers all internet-based phone calls, including WhatsApp, Skype, and Viber to protect the local mobile companies.
And this tariff is to encourage Zambians to use traditional phone calls. And those that choose, it's a choice, those that choose to use the internet for phone calls will pay that tariff of 30 ngwe per day. It does not affect social media, only for internet phone calls. That 30 ngwe is not about tax, it's about keeping these jobs in Zambia.
But Richard Mulonga, founder of the Zambia Bloggers Association and journalist, is not happy with the new internet tax.
The proposed 30 ngwe, which is about 30 cents in terms of US dollars, is a major hindrance and an affront to freedom of expression, to press freedom, access to information, and the enjoyment of digital rights. We feel the proposed tariff on the internet calls actually is going to widen the gap. It's going to promote digital exclusion at the expense of many citizens, especially women and girls who we feel should be enjoying the internet services to advance development and reduce inequalities in terms of gender, in terms of income, and social inclusion.
I also spoke to some Lusaka residents on the new tax, and this is what they had to say.
My name is Chakudia Moze. You know, I'm not very happy with the tax that I've introduced by the government. For instance, the women in informal economy really will suffer because now they've grouped themselves and be using WhatsApp for, you know, publicizing their businesses and things like that. So this really will bring the small entrepreneurs to hold on to their businesses, which is really a sad development for Zambia.
My name is James Banda. The introduction of tax against internet calls is a very progressive move by government. For me, I take it that government would like to tax us twice when we buy bundles and also when we make calls. It is going to take Zambians backward.
The government will collect the tax through mobile service providers who will monitor citizens' calls online. The move comes just as the government seeks to introduce the Cybersecurity and Cybercrimes Bill.
Kathy Sikombe reporting. Now, Wanjiko, it's like they're following the footsteps of Uganda that tried to introduce a tax on WhatsApp calls.
Of all things, You're already buying data bundles from the telecommunications company.
Which is already taxed.
Yes. But now they go on a step forward and tax also your calls. Now, Chonta Malinga says this has nothing to do with silencing divergent views. Our Zambian government is broke. Already they have a budget overrun of $500 million, and we are deep in debt, which our leaders have no clue how to liquidate apart from resorting to high taxes.
Good comment there. And Niamba says, if you want to create jobs, invest in technology, teach your youth to be innovative and create needed technology. Don't sell what Americans created and allowed you to use for free. I think he has a point there to make. I mean, I don't think, you know, the authorities are really at point complaining that international calls are free think they should be happy about
that. They should be happy. And as we had in the report, the small entrepreneurs, the small medium enterprises are the ones that will suffer because they take advantage of the fact that the calls are cheaper than the traditional calls
and most of
to do business.
Yeah, and most of them have subscribed to some forums, you know, in Europe, you know, to learn innovative ways of doing their thing. Now, like, listen to this. Tumsang Maps just says, first it was Uganda's Museveni, and now it's Lungu. They're definitely trying to shut people up. And France from Zambia says, my country is turning into a no freedom to information zone.
So many other comments coming in. Thank you so much for keeping it Africa Link. We will be reading some more of them shortly.
On the spot. Now we head over to Uganda, where a government research has revealed that street children are being used for business. The research carried out by the Ugandan police and the country's Ministry of Labour and Social Development says that the street children beg on the street and the money is shared with some of their own parents.
Our correspondent Alex Gita reports that some of the street children, especially girls, have been forced into prostitution to be able to collect enough money.
It is becoming harder to move 10 feet on any Kampala street without seeing a street beggar, more so a child. Uganda is estimated to have at least 37,000 children begging on the streets of Kampala and major towns countrywide. They are on these streets for one purpose, money. I meet Sisi along these streets. She tells me she does not have a second name. She's on the streets because her auntie told her to come and beg for money. Sisi says she's expected to go back home with at least 10,000 Uganda shillings, approximately €3 per day.
I finished like 1 year going to street to beg for money. When you don't bring 10,000, you not sleep, you not eat. Any day a man come and said to me, can I give you 2,000? I want to sleep with you. And they said yes. And you can sleep with that man. My aunt asked me, where do you sleep? I said, I was working for the money. You told me to bring money every day, bring 20,000.
Sisi says she's around 13 years old, but she's not sure. But whether 13 or 14 years old, she says her auntie allows her in the house only if she comes back with money. The government says there are more people like Sisi's auntie who exploit children. Uganda's Deputy Minister for Gender, Peace Mutuzo, confirms this.
Others were being misused by lawbreakers. Others were just picked from the villages innocently, like the children from Karamoja. And their parents are also being paid to have the children on the streets. They are being paid a salary of around 300,000 shillings. Those are some of the things that we have been fighting against, and we shall not stop.
The police and the statutory institutions have intensified efforts to remove the children from the streets and into rehabilitation homes. They have also made it illegal in Kampala to give money to street children. Rita Kemba, who runs Dwelling Places, an organization involved in caring for former street children, welcomed the move.
The more you give those children money, that money goes to the adults. So it doesn't help to give these children money. It simply just keeps them on the streets.
A section of the public has contested this, saying government has failed in its core duty of taking care of these children and making sure the streets are clear.
For me, you cannot tell me that giving these kids that little money will make others to come. Even if they come, whose role is it to ensure that these people are not on the streets?
People should be advised always not to donate money. But these children should be kept somewhere. If we want to donate anything to these children, we should go to those centers or to those schools, but not to be given on streets, because they take it as an advantage that they get something from these streets.
80% of the children on the streets of Kampala come from the northeastern region of Karamoja, an area prone to drought. But there are many documented reasons as to why children end up on the streets. These include domestic violence, child abuse, and poverty. The campaign to remove street children has been ongoing for years with no success. Hopefully, this latest campaign will be different and give these children a childhood they deserve.
That report by Alex Gita on the spot in Kampala, Uganda.
Living Planet Africa.
To Ghana, now where snails are a delicacy, and a group of young graduates has embarked on snail farming as one way of boosting the country's efforts on food security and nutrition. Under the LICABS food group, they train farmers on how to rear organic snails and help them with the marketing to potential clients using a mobile app.
Now, according to the group, the snail population has drastically declined due to the use of pesticides and wildfires. Maxwell Sook in northern Ghana visited their farm and filed this report.
These are the new laid eggs. Yeah, some of them are yet to hatch, but some are already hatched.
21-year-old Kwashi Emefa Yunis is happily inspecting her small snail farm at the backyard in the Brown Ahafo region. She tells me what motivated her.
From my infancy, I love snails. I love to eat them. And I took it as an opportunity to rear them as they are in seasonal animals and you not get them always. So I took it as an opportunity to rear them so that I'll always get them to feed myself and feed other people.
MFA took to snail farming after being introduced to them by the LICABS food group. One of its members and her mentor, Rachel Jominan Ganson, is impressed by her efforts to conserve the snail population.
I saw she was interested and then I then said, okay, why don't we start with few snails that we can get from the market? So we built the pen, then we got it started. She started some months ago and then I'm impressed that she has a lot of eggs and she has only 7 snails a year. This time she'll be having a whole bunch of snails.
Ghana currently consumes up to 15,000 tons of snails annually, and out of the figure, about 13,000 comes from Ivory Coast and the rest is produced by Ghanaian snail hunters. At the market in Sunyani, Agatha Frimpong is displaying her snails on the table. She has been selling snails for the past 25 years and tells me the market is good.
People like snails so much, except for those who think it is taboo to eat them.
Snails are a good source of revenue, and at the moment, a good snail goes for 3 cedis. That is more than half a dollar. Farming snails can offer great fortune to farmers if managed well, says Kofi Vignon, one of the farmers LICABS is dealing with. He has 6 million snails at the moment.
And even people came from Nigeria just to get my snails. And I'm getting people also from France that we are also negotiating with. If you go to some part of Europe too, yes, they are really interested in the snails. So snail can really contribute a lot.
The abundance of organic feed like mushroom and vegetables to feed the snails means that people like Kofi will continue to strive on snail farming over the years and save them from extinction.
That report by Maxwell Sook in Ghana. Now, we are receiving lots of comments on this story, eh?
Yes. On Facebook, we said, for some of you, is this... Oh, yummy. Do you enjoy snail meat? And we have many comments there, Wanjiko. Rain says, in Ghana, animal farming is the next big thing. Most youth are getting to eat. I own a rabbit farm.
And we have also Mira who says, it's delicious and nutritious. Quite expensive, though. Mm. Do you eat snails? I have to ask.
I don't, but some people here eat it and they enjoy it, like Hassan Trawali, who says, oh, I eat it almost every day. I like to eat cassava leaf or palm butter, tobogi, whatever that is, Wanjiko.
I would love to visit Ghana and actually taste some of this delicious snail. I don't know if I could, you know. In East Africa, we don't eat snails so often. So it would be quite an experience for me. Another comment here from Funmis in Nigeria who says it's yummy.
Mira Duke says, I love snails. I hope the farmers can beat down the perception. Many thanks for that. And on behalf of the team there, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Wanjiku Mwaura. Until next time, goodbye. Bye.